Монголын дуу хоолой радио ярьж байна.
The Voice of Mongolia in English is speaking. Сайн байна уу? Welcome to the Voice of Mongolia in English, which comes to you from Ulaanbaatar, the capital city of Mongolia. This half-hour transmission can be heard in Southeast Asia at 900 UTC on 12085 kHz and in Europe at 1430 UTC at 12015 kHz shortwave. You can also visit our website at www.vom.mn/en and listen to an online version of our daily broadcast.
Welcome to a new edition of The Voice of Mongolia in English. In this edition, we're going to present daily news first and after the Mongolian poetry breaks. We'll be back with a talk about Buddhism history in Mongolia. So stay with us. Here is the news. Views exchanged on organizing high-level reciprocal visits. A political consultation was held between the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Mongolia and the Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office of the United Kingdom in Ulaanbaatar. During the meeting, the parties revived the current state of Mongolia-Ukraine relations and cooperation, and also exchanged the views on the further intensification of bilateral cooperation, including the joint celebration of the 60th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic relations between the two countries in 2023 and the organization of high-level reciprocal visits. The sides stressed the importance of starting negotiations on a partnership and cooperation agreement between Mongolia and the UK in the near future to expand the bilateral cooperation in all areas. There was also an exchange of views on some issues of international relations, proposals and initiatives aimed at ensuring regional security. Appropriate learning environment to be curated for special needs children. The Ministry of Education and Science, the General Authority for Education, and the Japan International Cooperation Agency, or JICA, co-organized a consultative meeting on ways to ensure the right to education for children with special needs. The consultative meeting organized under the theme, The Right to Study, was attended by the Minister of Education and Science, the Ministry's State Secretary, Head of the General Authority for Education, representatives of JICA, teachers and executives of special schools, parents and students, as well as representatives of NGOs. About 1,800 school-age children with special needs currently have no more access to educational services. In aims of curating equal access to education, the Ministry of Education is carrying out certain works such as improving the learning environment at schools by reflecting it in the package Law on Education, preparing special education teachers and personnel, curating the appropriate conditions for the children and attend mainstream schools and learn alongside their peers and increasing public awareness. World Bank's monitoring and evaluation team works in Western Province. A team in charge of monitoring and evaluation led by World Bank specialist Christopher Finch worked in Western Uruhanga province to become acquainted with the implementation of the Third Sustainable Livelihoods Project and the operations of the Local Development Fund. As the province consistently leads in the annual performance assessment, studies are planned to be carried out on the province's practices in order to introduce them in the other provinces, noted the World Bank specialist. In the framework of the good governance, performance-based support program of the project, assessments are carried out on the performances of local development funds in SOMS. In turn, this makes it possible to find out which parts of the fund need certain improvements, curating the conditions to take appropriate measures, such as holding capacity building training and organizing various activities to increase citizens' participation in local development fund activities. Youth Employability Landscape Study Mongolia launched. Laurinet Foundation launched the Youth Employability Landscape Study Mongolia. The launch event was attended by over 60 representatives from the public and private sectors, as well as several participants from the development sector, including international NGOs and civil society organizations. The event was marked by a panel discussion on boosting employability and employment among Mongolian youth. The panelists spoke about issues relating to school-to-work transition for young people and reviewed the roles of various stakeholders in addressing the issues related to youth unemployment. This report was commissioned by Laurinet Foundation last year. It is envisaged to support policymakers, employers, development partners, and all the stakeholders working on the theme of youth employment in their decision-making and consequently improve the effects of their actions. Laurinet Foundation now intends to invest more strongly in programs and solutions that enable young people to gain the skills necessary for employment and entrepreneurship so that they can build a future for themselves and their communities. Laurinet Foundation is a family foundation with offices in Switzerland, Singapore, and Mongolia. Ambassador pays a courtesy call on the President of Italian Senate. Ambassador of Mongolia to the Italian Republic a courtesy call on the President of the Italian Senate and exchanged their views on bilateral cooperation. During the courtesy call, the sides expressed their satisfaction for recent developments in various fields of bilateral relations between Mongolia and Italy. President of the Italian Senate highlighted the importance of enhanced cooperation between legislative bodies of the two countries for further strengthening cooperation in other areas. Ambassador touched upon vast opportunities in enhancing bilateral relations in all areas of mutual interest and enriching the substance of economic cooperation. Ambassador also informed that cooperation program between the Government of Mongolia and the Government of the Italian Republic in the fields of education, culture, science and sport 2022 to 2025 was signed in April this year. The two sides also expressed their willingness to work closely to broaden bilateral relations between Mongolia and Italy. So that's all for today's daily news, and after the Mongolian poetry breaks, we'll be back with a talk about Buddhism history in Mongolia.
Have you ever interested in Mongolian poems? This is Mongolian Poetry Bricks. It tells modern Mongolian poetry.
Although we have different mother tongues and come from different countries and cultures, we share one large heart for poetry.
We have a common home named globe. Poetry is a special way of looking at the world. Please enjoy the moment. Now, let me read the poem, A Very Big White Elephant, by this poet. A very big white elephant has passed through the world. He is left with the calmness of the mighty ocean. He is left uprooting the serenity of the earth. He is left shaking dew from the topmost leaves. He is returned disturbing the sun gods. He is left commandeering golden temples shining with blood. He is left waking gray peaks under snow. He is left shutting the eyes of the mighty. He is returned shaking east and west. A very big white elephant has passed through the world. A very big white elephant.
Please welcome back. This is Voice of Mongolia in English. Today we'll tell you about Buddhism history in Mongolia. Buddhism is a religion to about 3 million people around the world. The word comes from buddhi, or which means to awaken. It has its origins about 2500 years ago when Siddhartha Gautama, known as the Buddha, was himself awakened or enlightened at the age of 35. After enlightenment, the Buddha spent the rest of his life teaching the principles of Buddhism, the truth, until his death at the age of 80. One way or another, Buddhism has been thriving as a major religion in Mongolia. Mongolia is not only one of the countries of Buddhism of long tradition, but a country in which Buddhism, Buddhist monasteries and lamas still exist today. How Buddhism came to Mongolia is still arguable, and it is said that early Mongolian contacts with Buddhism are dated to the 4th century, when the activities of Chinese monks among the population of this border area are reported in contemporary Chinese sources. However, studies show that when Kublai Khan took over power and established the Yuan Dynasty, Buddhism took power.
Hi, my name is Saskia Abrams-Kavanenko, and I'm a researcher researching Mongolian Buddhism from the Max Planck Institute for Social Anthropology. I'm originally Australian. So most people would say that there's, I guess, three main sort of periods that you could look at in Buddhism. Most Mongolians would say that they date the sort of, I guess, the contact with Buddhism from Chinggis Khan, so from the Mongolian Empire. And certainly Kublai Khan was very influential in the kind of initial introduction of Buddhism in Mongolia. So he made a sort of relationship with a particular lama, and it was kind of, you know, that was when Buddhism, especially the Vajrayana style, really became strong in Mongolia. And then there was a period of, many things were happening in Mongolia, and there was a period, and it wasn't until the 16th century that after the end of the Mongolian Empire that Buddhism came in again for a second sort of, you know, some people would call it the second conversion of people here, but there is evidence to suggest that there was temples, you know, throughout the kind of the centuries after the Mongolian Empire. And the person who was called Altan Khan reignited a relationship with Tibetan schools of Buddhism, particularly with the Gelugpa form of Buddhism, which is the yellow form. Kublai Khan had a relationship with the Sakya form, which is a slightly different lineage. And then, of course, the 1930s was a quite bad period for Buddhism in Mongolia, and there was a lot of lamas were killed. It's estimated around 18,000 lamas or 17,000, depending on who you read. Monasteries were disbanded, and then it was a kind of a period of repression. And so since 1990, people have been trying to sort of reimagine their own traditions and improvise what Buddhism is and kind of bring in all sorts of different sources about what Buddhism is and how to practice.
To many, Buddhism goes beyond religion and is more a philosophy or way of life. It is a philosophy because philosophy means a law of wisdom, and the Buddhist path can be summed up. Therefore, it is a practice in numerous places, and it is strange why Saskia chose Mongolia to study Buddhism. Then she explained what is the specialty of Mongolian Buddhism.
So the situation of Buddhism is very interesting in Mongolia. It's, it was dormant for almost 60 years or actively repressed by the socialist government and is now experiencing a kind of resurgence here. And the style of Buddhism that's practiced here is Vajrayana Buddhism, which is a very interesting type of Buddhism which combines Tantra and Mahayana Buddhist practice. And it's called the Thunderbolt Path, which means that it's supposed to be a very direct form of becoming enlightened. And that's a particular style of Buddhism that I'm interested in. So those two things combined make it a very interesting kind of topic for study. I've observed a lot of things. It's very interesting to see how local temples have kind of people try to sort of re-engage with their own traditions again after the end of the socialist period. People would re-inhabit temples, rebuild temples. Old lamas, that used to be part of old monasteries before the socialist period, they started to wear robes again, and then they took on students, which is quite amazing given some of these men were 90 years old. And then they had been practicing in secret the whole time during the socialist period. So it's a very interesting phenomenon. And then also because Mongolia's type of Buddhism has always been connected to the Tibetan region. And those links have been re-established again, which is very interesting. So now some of the Tibetans who live in diaspora and, all around the world are now reconnecting with Mongolian Buddhist institutions to help them to re-engage with teachings and to learn more about Buddhism. And Mongolia is quite unique in terms of Vajrayana Buddhism. It had this sort of kind of history of different conversions. It also has had some key figures which have made it quite different. So, most Mongolians would know the figure of Zanbazar. He's a very influential kind of figure in the sort of the making of Mongolian Buddhism as a unique sort of practice of Buddhism. He was a very, very good artist and made very beautiful statues. Also invented the Soyombo script, which now the symbol of the Soyombo is on the Mongolian flag. So it's a very important image. And he also is said to have kind of created the style of robes that the Mongolians wear. So there's a you will often see around and about Mongolian monks. It's very cold in Mongolia. So Mongolian monks have kind of different robes which have a sort of cuff. The other unique thing about Mongolia is this emphasis on the blue haddock, which is a ceremonial scarf. And I've not seen it as used as much as in Mongolia, so that's quite interesting as well, that the style, I guess, aesthetically is quite different.
When the communist rule in Mongolia broke down, the country looked back at the ultimately fruitless attempt to erase all the religion from the Mongolian landscape. the indigenous religion as well as Buddhism. The sudden revival of Buddhism in Mongolia after 1990 is only astonishing at first glance. Religion never ceased to exist in Mongolia. Even in the communist era, many Mongolians have found a way to practice religion secretly. Today, even former party leaders admit to having practiced Buddhist rites or to consulting astrologers during the time when the practice of religion was officially forbidden. Since 1992, freedom of religion has been granted in the constitution, and the suppression of religious and secular institutions has been established. This new freedom of religion is observable everywhere in the country. People flock to the monasteries, making circumambulations, giving offering to the Buddha and Bodhisattvas whose statues are either being restored or built anew. However, on the way to revival, Buddhism is being challenged by some issues.
The other interesting thing about Mongolian Buddhism, I guess the greatest challenge, is that especially in the city, temples don't have many resources. And so after the end of the socialist period, you know, when monks were rebuilding or re-inhabiting temples, there was already a city that was built. And, you know, Ulaanbaatar's changed so much over the period of time that I've been here. And it has a lot since 1990. So a lot of new skyrises and things have built up, which have meant that the temples themselves are very kind of have a lot of buildings around the sides of them, which then makes it difficult for monks to live in a monastic residence, which is the tradition within Vajrayana Buddhism that, and within most forms of Buddhism, that you would, as a monk, you would live inside a temple. But monks here aren't, there are some, you know, some places like Petobhi that have the ability to live in the temple, but it's quite, it's relatively unusual. So a lot of monks have to live with family members. And this then becomes quite difficult for some people who, you know, if they want to devote themselves to Buddhism in the sense of this kind of a tradition here, which is that some monks will be married, which is just a different style of Buddhism. Because they have to live outside of the home, then they have to deal with certain material kind of constraints as well, which I think makes it quite difficult for monks here. There's different social pressures on them than there are in, say, Tibet or other countries.
Saskia from Australia is writing a book about her research and writing academic articles on Mongolian Buddhism to spread information. Having heard from Mongolian Buddhists through Saskia, the brothers of Buddhism would gather together to learn from and help each other, Saskia hopes. Religions in Mongolia are an eternal topic of interest for foreigners, and the number of foreigners comes to Mongolia to study the matter. It included Saskia from Australia and also Rob Hamenick from Holland, who is making a documentary on religions in Mongolia. Rob shared his view on Buddhism in Mongolia.
Well, it's still dominating. Dominating is a wrong word, maybe, but it's more than 50% of the Mongolians are Buddhist. And I think that number is still growing. The good thing about Buddhism is that they don't really force you to be a Buddhist. You know, you have your free choice. And if you're attracted to their way of life and to the religion, then you're very welcome to join them. But they don't. For example, some Christian churches force you to be a member. It's all free choice.
Buddhism is really reviving, and people are, at their own choice, becoming Buddhist. Mongolia was a very big in Buddhism country in the past, but then we destroyed the monasteries. Then now, monasteries are being replenished. So that's why I'm asking, have you been to the monasteries?
Yes, I've been to this wonderful leading monastery, which is, the name is just outside a center, or, what's the name of it? Sorry, I cannot recall.
But the
Gandan. And there was a professor, I interviewed a professor Bugan, and he is professor at the National University, and he's a monk in philosophy and religious studies. This afternoon I had an interesting interview with him, and I was impressed by the monastery, how big it is, and they're still adding new buildings to it, and I can see that more and more people are into Buddhism, and especially young people.
For me, Buddhism is like it's a way of life more than being a religion, because it is have to clear your mind, have to reach the enlightenment and stuff. So that's why more Mongolians have access to what it is. I think they're understanding and then having the real and right version of Buddhism.
Interesting thing that I heard, news actually, you have a scoop, is that the Dalai Lama himself wants to turn or likes to have Mongolia as a new center of Buddhism, which will attract a lot of tourists and people, and that therefore the effect will be on the economy very good.
Was there any difference between the monasteries in Mongolia and in other countries?
Not really. I mean, the monks are the monks. They wear, in Thailand, for example, they wear different colors like orange, and here it's more red and yellow. But the atmosphere was comparable if you go to other Asian countries of where Buddhism is alive. The Dalai Lama, of course, it sounds not respectful, but he's a manager of Buddhism, of course, and he has to make sure that Buddhism will stay alive. So therefore, he tries to find the correct countries where it's not being attacked, like China or Tibet. You know, Tibet is part of China, and there's all misery around it. So he wants to find a very stable country where his religion can land and grow. So I think in that sense, Mongolia is a perfect spot.
As Saskia and Rob mentioned, choosing Buddhism over and over again shows that Mongolia deep down has been loyal to Buddhism since it was spread through. The two of the Buddhist enthusiasts both think Mongolia in 10 years will have more respect towards Buddhism. Here we end this edition of The Voice of Mongolia in English. You heard about Mongolian Buddhism history, and thank you for listening, and goodbye. That's the end of the program, which comes to you from Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. The Voice of Mongolia provides half-hour transmission to Southeast Asia at 900 UTC on 12085 kHz, and in Europe at 1430 UTC on 12015 kHz shortwave. You can also download the phone application MNB Radio and listen to all the programs of Voice of Mongolia. Your emails and letters are most welcome with your feedbacks and detailed reception report. Please either email them to vom_en@yahoo.com or send them to the English section, The Voice of Mongolia, CPO Box 365, Ulaanbaatar 13, Mongolia.
Thank you for listening. 바이 시테.